This is Radio Omnibus, WFDU-FM's celebration of the arts and literature. Today, Susan Teltzer-Schwartz takes us on The Metro Beat, an examination of what's happening in and around New York City.
Good morning and welcome to The Metro Beat. This is Susan Teltzer-Schwartz, and this morning we have a double-barreled treat. We're going to speak with Marianne LaMonica, who is the chief curator and associate director of the gallery at the Bard Graduate Center. And the exhibition we'll be discussing is An Intimate History of the Silhouette. But the latter part of the program will be devoted to another exhibition at the Bard Graduate Center entitled The Interface, 40 Years of Personal Computing with Kimon Karamidis. So we're going to begin with the feminine side of things and the undergarments that made the costumes worn of yore so spectacular. And I welcome you, Marianne, this morning. We'll just alert people to the fact that they have until the 26th of July to enjoy the exhibition and tell them that the Bard Graduate Center is on 86th Street on the west side of Manhattan. It's between Columbus and Central Park West, and it's part of the Graduate Center. There are several buildings there, and the gallery is quite extensive. Actually, you're on three floors in that building, I believe.
That's correct, and we feel that the exhibitions that we show here really provide a wonderful intimate setting for people to really get up close and enjoy the works on view.
Well, you sort of feel as though you're a guest in a brownstone, you know, in somebody's private home, I think, which is rather special. So tell me, if you will, the philosophy behind the mounting of this exhibit, which is kind of behind the scenes or under the skirts or under the waistcoats or whatever of the fashion of the, 1800s, 1700s?
Yes, well, the exhibition is called Fashioning the Body, and it was organized in Paris by the Museum of Decorative Arts and was curated by Dr. Bruna, who was a curator there of fashion and textiles of the 19th century.
Right.
And his exhibition actually spanned a larger period of time. The show, as it is at the Bard Graduate Center, focuses primarily on the 18th through the early 20th century. There are a few pieces from today, but I would say that the real strengths are the earlier works in the 18th and 19th centuries.
Right. I'm going to interrupt you for one moment just to say, to be sure to mention, that people would know that admission is free on Thursday evening after 5 o'clock, and the gallery is open until 7 on Thursdays. And open
until 8 on Thursdays.
Ah, it's incorrect on my material here.
Thank you.
And what I wanted to say is that the general admission is $7 and seniors and students are $5. I believe that's correct.
Correct. And they're suggested admission, so we don't turn anyone away.
Which is very nice. And the hours I don't have right at hand. I have guided tour hours.
We're open every day, Tuesday through Sunday from 11 to 5. And on Thursday from 11 to 8. We're closed on Mondays.
Closed on Mondays. Perfect. Okay. So now here we are starting out looking at, go ahead and tell me.
Fashioning the Body.
Yes.
And the exhibition begins with a stunning piece, and actually it is the earliest piece in the show from the very beginning of the 17th century. It's dated 1590 to 1610, and it's a woman's doublet or jacket. It's from Spain, and it's made of a beautiful uncut velvet with silk taffeta lining. It's really a spectacular piece, and it shows how the fashionable figure of the female was really quite constricted in the 16th century. And what's wonderful about this show and the idea of going underneath or behind the seams, as you said, is that when the show was organized in Paris, they produced a number of automata and other means to show what's actually behind or underneath
the dresses. Yes, there are mechanical contraptions.
And in fact, but in this case, in the Spanish doublet, there's a reconstruction of the jacket with just done in fabric, which shows how just through additional fabric, padding, and stitching, they were able to create this rigid form, which has a kind of wide shoulder, and it then goes very narrow into the waist.
So what you see is not what you get in terms of the body form. It's the accoutrements, if you will, of the fashioning that makes you look the way you look in the finished product.
Exactly. And that was really the point of view of the curator, Denis Brunat. And he kept telling us, this is not a fashion show. This is a show about the body.
Exactly.
And how fashion is used to produce a transformation of the human figure through different kinds of mechanical devices. And by mechanical, we mean all of the means, whether it's a corset or a panier or a crinoline or a brassiere, all of these things that we use to reshape our bodies. And what has influenced that reshaping is, of course, the cultural body. And the changes over time are really an indication of the changes in social mores, the life at the court, and other such things that would have had an impact on fashion.
Well, also, in many of these garments, there was metal and wood and lacing, obviously. But, I mean, there was structure in there that really was a lot more than fabric.
Yes, and in fact, this first piece, the doublet, shows how fabric was used. But very quickly after that, there are a number of pieces which are what we would, if anyone coming to the gallery, would think of as just a corset.
Yes.
In their time period, they were called whalebone stays. And, of course, because the pieces of whalebone were used to shape and constrict the human form. And so there are a series of these early whalebone stays from the 18th century showing the different shapes as they evolved from about 1680 into the early mid-18th century.
And you have body aids for men as well, are there?
Exactly. As the show progresses, there are various places where we're able to include some men's garments and to show that this was not just for women, but all people at court and in high society were really subject to all kinds of panniers and stomach belts and girdles and push-up devices. And, of course, as we all know, that continues today.
Yes, well, and there were calf enhancers that were stuffed into stockings for men. Women wanted their legs slim and shapely, and men wanted their calves enhanced.
Right. Well, of course, if you can think back to the early 17th and 18th century, we wouldn't have seen women's legs at all.
Exactly.
But the men really cut a dashing figure in beautiful silk garments. And the garments that were shaped for men's body actually forced the shoulders back and therefore created a kind of S shape in the figure. And in order to continue that shape right through the whole body, some men apparently had to wear these enhancers for their calves. And the pieces that we have on view in the exhibition are really rare examples of this.
Well, and also the jackets are padded in such a way that their men are almost standing doing a semi-back bend.
Exactly. Yeah. They was really pushing the body back, pushing the shoulders back. And what I understood from another fashion historian is that in some of the men's jackets, the armholes were not constructed as we have them today,
mm-hmm.
but would have very much restricted the movement of the arm to be very close to the body. So
that's
no flailing of arms, just a kind of very rigid movement.
So if you had to defend yourself, you had to rip off your jacket.
I guess that's why we see that in so many movies.
Right, right. Well, then in terms also of the hollowing out and the arched back for the men, the women's garments made, not only did it flatten the stomach and actually press the waist almost to a point where it was hollowed out. I mean, it had to go somewhere, so some of it, I guess, went to the derriere and the bust, but also the bust line was often flattened. So
yes.
It was determined, I guess, based on the particular court or status of the wearer of the garment.
Yes, and in many cases you see, as in fashion through our lives, that they're always responding to an earlier period. So mm-hmm. at one point you have the bosom pushed very much up, and then at other points you see it descending and being covered, or even as you get to the early part of the 19th century when we have the Napoleonic period, you have those very thin chemise dresses and a very simple, just a bodice cover. It's not even a brassiere at that point.
Right.
And these things go in and out of fashion. I think the most, the one piece that you see often, and it really restructures the body, so either structuring the top or the bottom, is the corset. And the shapes of the corsets have changed over time, so much so that there are really extraordinary examples in the exhibition. So I always tell people that even if you think you've seen this before, there are so many wonderful examples that
right.
are so rare that it's really worth having another look.
Well, and there's a boned hoop skirt, and there's a what's called a fake buttocks, a
yes.
faux cul, and a shrimp tail jumpsuit kind of thing, which goes, I guess, in the back under the skirt to give you that extenuated rear.
Yes. Well, in the middle of the 19th century, around 1845 to 1870,
mm-hmm.
the style was to wear the wide crinoline, so mm-hmm. creating the hoop skirt. And some of us think of Gone with the Wind, for example.
But you don't mean the two side saddle pieces.
No, I don't mean that.
Okay.
Those were from
yeah.
the early, the panier,
okay.
which is what you're talking
right.
about, are from an earlier period
okay.
in the 18th century. But here in the 19th century, the rounded crinoline, which becomes very stylish,
mm-hmm.
which is usually made from steel hoops,
mm-hmm.
sometimes, well, the crinoline is coming from horsehair. But as you go into the later part of the 19th century, we see the bustle coming into fashion.
Mm-hmm.
So again, not rounding out the figure in 360 degrees, but rather the crinoline is defining the area behind the skirt, at the back of the skirt, the hip area and the buttocks.
Mm-hmm.
And you've mentioned some of the examples, the lobster tail, the faux cul, and they're really wonderful examples. Some of them were made out of very simple materials to show how this fashion permeated all strata of society. One is made out of a simple flour sack, but there are others made according to very complicated patents, and we have some of those examples in the show as well.
And then you have models wearing mechanized reconstructions of some of these devices, and it shows you how they move up and down and how you're able to sit with this folded up and back.
Yes, and that's really one of the wonderful things about this exhibition in particular. When it was on view in Paris, it was called Mécanique des Dessous, so it meant the mechanics underneath.
Yes.
And they really took that point to the extreme by creating these automata, these mechanical devices that show how the panier worked, how the bustles worked, and how women could actually sit or move through a doorway or get into a carriage wearing these kinds of garments.
Well, and I think that the women that I heard chatting as they went through were so grateful they didn't have to live then and wear those things. But on the other hand, I thought it was interesting as well that in today's world, a world of dieting and surgery and bodybuilding and au naturel and all of that, it's an entirely different emphasis, which is ever thus in the world of fashion.
Yes, and in fact, there's one section of the show where we have a series of mannequins that are undressed
mm-hmm.
so that we can show the change in the figure over time. But the change in the figure as it would have been shaped by these garments. And so you can see that, how either the bust is moving up, is going down, is coming out, is growing. And the exhibition moves into the 20th century, into today.
Right.
And we look at some of the bodices and forms that are more familiar to us. But thinking about, throughout the show, how the unique materials, and both natural materials like whalebone and wood, were used in the earlier centuries, steel, but also today how we have all kinds of new synthetic stretch fabrics, rubbers, and things that are used to enhance
right.
the bust line. And also we have a section on menswear at the very end
right.
where you see that there are pads that are used in men's underpants to enhance their buttocks and other things.
Other areas, right. Now, what I want to say is to check programming schedules. The phone number is 212-501-3011, or you can email programs at BGC, as in Bard Graduate Center, .bard.edu. And I'd like to just highlight quickly a program that will take place on Thursday, June 11th. There's a reception at 6, at 6:30, a lecture and dressing, and the lecture is called Stuffed and Stiffened, How X-Radiography Reveals the Secrets of Multi-Layered Garments, and there is a fee. It's $25 for general admission and $20 for seniors. So there's a cost.
May I interrupt?
Yes.
That students are always free.
Oh, excellent. And there's a stage designer and renowned costume and stage designer, Jenny Tiramani, presenting the lecture and dressing demonstration, which sounds really not only exciting, but revelatory, if you will, you know, Illustrating all the things that we're talking about. There is a publication available at the center, is that correct?
Correct, and also on our website.
Okay, so that is good to know. And what I wanted to say is that the lighting in the exhibit is very luxurious. It's dim, but it obviously highlights the backgrounds and the cases in contrast with the exhibition we'll be discussing in a couple of moments about the interface experience, which is all state-of-the-art bright lights. And I think it's such an interesting contrast between the two exhibitions, which have nothing to do with one another and are obviously equally enlightening and in a way startling, if you will. So I suggest that people get to the Bard Graduate Center and allow yourself plenty of time. Are you on three floors with the Silhouette exhibition?
That's correct. Yes.
And you can walk up, but there is an elevator for those who need that. So keep that in mind. And there are limited items for sale at the desk there. There are some books and some postcards and brochures, for sure, about the exhibitions and the programs. So I would like to thank you very much, Marianne Lemonaka, for being our guest this morning on the Metro Beat. And I hope that people will go and ogle what was and revel in what is.
Thank you. Thank you, Susan, and I extend our welcome to everyone.
Okay, so don't forget, it's Fashioning the Body, an Intimate History of the Silhouette at the Bard Graduate Center. Part of the Metro Beat this morning is going to address the exhibition, also at the Bard Graduate Center at 18 West 86th Street in Manhattan. And this exhibition is The Interface Experience, 40 Years of Personal Computing. And the curator is Kimoon Karamidis, I think. And he is an associate professor and director of the Digital Media Lab at the Bard Graduate Center. And the contrast between the exhibition downstairs with the dim, glamorous lighting and the state-of-the-art, wonderfully lit, loaded with technology exhibit upstairs is really a wonderful contrast. So I welcome you very much, Kimoon, and I'd like you to tell me a little, I know a little about why you did this, but the folks don't. So it was through a tactile and interactive experience that you want people, I guess, to understand the progress and the final destination of technology, more or less.
Yes, so first of all, thanks a lot for having me.
My pleasure.
We love any kind of attention the show is getting. We want to have as many people as possible see it, so it's great to be able to talk about a little bit on air.
And it's there through the 19th of July.
Yes,
okay.
True. Exactly.
All right.
So the show started a few years ago. I was asked to do an exhibition, and part of the question was the space is the Focus Gallery, and it's a project space where faculty get to take their intellectual arguments and put them into physical space, where we're used to doing textual things like writing books and journal articles.
Oh, excellent.
This is a chance for us to think of how do we make arguments in space. And
mm-hmm.
So I was asked to make an exhibition on anything I wanted. And as the director of the Digital Media Lab, I've been interested in the intersection of the technologies we study in the lab with the kind of the material culture, which is at the center of the Bard Graduate Center studies.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to make an exhibition about computers, but I wanted it to make be a personal experience where people could touch these computers and that they would be physical objects that they could relate to from their own personal experiences. When I've gone to museums in the past, a lot of the times computers are kind of off in the corner behind glass and they're turned off.
Mm-hmm.
But the way we experience computing devices, from the biggest computer all the way down to our smallest mobile device, is when they're turned on and they're these physical objects and there's software and we're using them. And so there's a really kind of experiential moment. And so that's why the show ended up being called the Interface Experience.
Mm-hmm.
It's those experiences that are on display just as much as the objects.
Right. And so, you want people to understand the design, the software, and the user interface work, and not just look at things as, you know, the components, the metal and the glass and the wires.
Exactly right. You know, it's when we're using computers, we don't think about them as design, like aesthetic objects, but we do think about how they make it easier for us to do things.
Mm-hmm.
And so the challenge was, how do you do that in a space? So first of all, we had to break down these barriers in a museum where you can't touch things.
Right.
So downstairs, like you mentioned, there's these beautiful gowns. Some of them are 400 years old, and you can't touch them for obvious reasons. But this was a set of objects which have sold in the millions and which are easy to obtain. And so we could provide a different type of experience. All of the things in the exhibit were bought on eBay, so that meant we didn't have to spend a lot of money.
Cool, that's great.
There's less than $6,000 worth of stuff in that whole room.
Right.
And that also meant we could open up a different type of interactivity, this tactile touching that you mentioned. So all the computers, you can go up and you can punch a keyboard from the 1970s, you can use a stylus from the 90s.
And some of the game controls that young...
Yeah, exactly. The old Atari joysticks, which, you know,
yeah,
give you wrist injuries, but were like really innovative at the time. And I wanted to be able to, people to be able to feel those things and to remember also what it was like to touch and use those devices and not just look at them.
Right.
And so then we also thought, how can we get the experience? So it's one thing to go up to some of the older objects and touch them in a way that, you know, is interactive, but really we wanted to bring back kind of historical experiences of the software and the hardware together.
Mm-hmm.
So there are five core objects: the Commodore 64, the Macintosh, the Palm Pilot, the iPad, and the Microsoft Kinect, which represent different stages in the development of interface. So the Commodore is kind of keyboards, the Mac introduces the mouse, the Palm Pilot is mobile and it's got a stylus, the iPad is, you know, these glass touchscreens. And then the Kinect is a gestural technology which can recognize where you are in space without touching it whatsoever.
And these are all functioning.
And they're all functioning,
yeah,
right,
mm-hmm,
as you saw. And the idea of getting them to function is that you can actually experience each of these devices and the interface, including the hardware, active software, and the user. So that was the most important part of the project. And I worked with my students over the course of the semester to come up with short museum experience scripts, 60 to 90 seconds long, that would be evocative of each object. You know, what made that object important when it
excellent.
Came out.
Excellent. So all this, so the software was done specifically for this exhibition.
Exactly. They're mm-hmm. custom-made applications
mm-hmm.
that never existed beforehand. We hired a developer who was able to create programs for all five computers, which
mm-hmm.
is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And he worked with the students to create these really precise little experiences. So they're not full games or full spreadsheet software packages. They accomplish a specific museum-based goal. So if you go to the Commodore, for instance, you have to load a program, and then you have to use the keyboard to type some information in. And then you can change the colors of the background or the colors of the fonts or play a sound. All of these things were very new in the 80s when this computer came out. And the keyboard is really clunky and really physically different. So we wanted to highlight that material experience. If you're going to run a piece of software, you have to use this kind of awful keyboard. And it's always fun to watch people make a mistake and they have to figure, well, where's the delete key? It's not where it normally is. And
right.
How do I move the cursor? And we wanted to get people to have that awkward moment. And then to move on to the mouse and use the Mac mouse, which was the first one that came out, And that, you know, menus, you have to click and hold down the menu, while now when we click a menu, it stays open on our computer screen. So each of the scripts allowed the visitor to understand what was important about that device when it came out and how the newness would reflect through the experience of the device.
Well, what I think you've also accomplished is that we take a lot of these conveniences for granted now, and we don't remember the stages that one had to go through to get to this point. And, you know, the technology now is just mind-boggling, and we've kind of lost contact with the perspective of how this has affected our everyday life. We just, as I say, expect it to work and get and do what we need.
Exactly. That was really the kind of intellectual thesis behind the project, mm-hmm. was that the 40 years of computers, the first kind of mainstream PCs came out in 1977. And in that time, which is within a lifetime for many of us, right? I remember most of these devices from my early kind elementary school days.
Right.
And everyone can kind of go up to the timeline and go, oh, I remember that date,
sure.
and then move forward. And to see how much has changed in such a little time, really, historically.
Right. Now, you have a wall where many of the smaller devices are attached with Velcro, so you can just take any iPad or cell phone or whatever off and use it and try it and put it back and compare it with another one.
Exactly right. That was the most playful space, too, is, you know, when I picked the iPad, it's actually more recent than the iPhone, which really brought the touchscreens and everything onto the market.
Mm-hmm.
But the iPad is more of a computer than the iPhone. But nevertheless, the iPhone and the shape of a handheld device is so important that I wanted to have as many kind of manifestations of a mobile handheld device visible so that you could see that in the 3.5 by 5.5 inch rectangle that most of these devices are, there's been so many different types of designs.
Right.
Physical keyboards, touch screens,
right.
different monitors, cameras, how they flip open.
Right.
And we put them on Velcro so you could pull them off the wall and have a lot of fun with them.
Well, Kamoun, our time is running out, but I just want to mention to people that on Tuesday, the 23rd of June, there is a gallery talk, The Interface Experience, 40 Years of Personal Computing, at 6:30, and there is a $25 general admission charge, $20 for seniors, and students are always free, and the phone number to check on programs is 212-501-3011, and also, I believe there's a publication that's available at the Graduate Center that people can look through about the technology and the exhibition. So what I recommend is that The Interface Experience, 40 Years of Personal Computing, which will be at the Bard Graduate Center through the 19th of July, should be experienced and shared. And I thank you very much, Kamoun Karamidis, for being my guest this morning. He is the director of the Digital Media Lab at Bard Graduate Center, and I think I'd like to sit in on some of those classes. This is Susan Teltzer-Schwartz doing the Metro Beat for WFDU-FM. Thank you for listening.
You've been listening to the Metro Beat with your host, Susan Teltzer-Schwartz. Radio Omnibus will be back with another edition next Sunday at this same time. Thank you for listening.